Hello. I just want to start by thanking you all so much for having me along this morning and giving me a chance to talk about humour, which is a subject that is just really, really close to my heart. It's interesting to me, if you ever watch the Academy Awards ceremony, that it's so rare for a comedy film to win Best Picture, but almost every ceremony is hosted by a comedian. And I really think that that suggests that although we all love to have a laugh, there's somehow this sense that humour and comedy is an adjunct to real art and real expression. And I think maybe sometimes in church, laughter can be seen as an adjunct to real worship or real fellowship or real connection with Jesus. And to me, that's a really impoverished view of God and of our life with God. So I'm really happy that already today there's been so much laughter in this service, and I think that reflects really beautifully on this community that's here. So today I have a little talk, and I've given it the title In Praise of Silliness, because I love God, and by God I love to laugh. And thinking about this topic has led me in all kinds of directions. I'm going to try and maintain some sense of focus. I know that a good sermon has three key points. They all start with the same letter and they progress from least to most important. But this is not a good sermon. So it has many more than three points. They start with an assortment of random letters. And as far as sequence and order goes, I'm just hoping that you'll be happy to jump on board the crazy train of my thoughts and follow along. Sometimes I will connect what I say to God. Sometimes I'll let you connect what I say to God. But I suspect much of the time we'll all be thinking, God only knows what this has to do with anything. So here we go. I want to start by telling you a little portion of my story. Before I do that, I have a few more disclaimers. Number one, I know that humour is subjective and that the range of experiences, ideas and values in this room is really diverse. So I'm not going to pretend that I have anything to say that has universal appeal or relevance. I'm just going to speak for me. Number two, I'm not any kind of expert in comedy. I recently tried stand-up for the first time, but I don't think I'm a comedian. If I were to call myself a comedian based on experience, I could also probably call myself an athlete, an author, and a vegan, because I've tried all of those things a couple of times. Number three, I prepared this in a bit of a hurry, so I would love a whole extra year to think about this topic and develop these thoughts further. So I really feel like we're just going to scratch the surface today, but I think that's worth doing. I also apologise, I'm probably going to be reading a fair bit because this was pretty much finished this morning, so I haven't really distilled it into any kind of palm card form or anything yet. All right, so my story. Laughter and jokes have been important to me my whole life, due in large part to my dad's wonderful sense of humour and his sense of fun. He was king of the dad jokes, introducing me and my sister at a very early age to such gems as, put the kettle on, but it doesn't suit me. And, hi, hungry, I'm dad. Yeah, the faces on the kids who are still here say it all. Oh, my God. It was also Dad who introduced me to a lot of the funny radio and TV shows, books, cartoons, films, and other texts that still have not lost their charm for me today, talking about listening to The Goon Show on the radio every Saturday. I used to love Monty Python, Peanuts cartoons, so bittersweet, love those. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, he read that to us when we were kids. When we were a little older, we saw The Young Ones and Blackadder on TV. Movies like The Blues Brothers. Casablanca, surprisingly funny for such a dramatic film. And all of Roald Dahl's wonderful stories. So many more of those sorts of things. I grew to love making jokes myself. Dad was my most appreciative audience. My teachers, less enthusiastic. And I still haven't forgiven Miss Kwiatkowski for giving me 100 lines that afternoon in 1985. As I moved through school and uni, I made lots of lovely friends. And many of them enjoyed the same kind of comedy that I did, and we spent lots of really great times together watching The Late Show on the ABC and so on. I graduated and became a teacher and really enjoyed using humour in my classroom to help my students to learn, but also just to help them feel comfortable in my class. I married a really wonderful man and we have two gorgeous children, and I'm enjoying nurturing their sense of fun the way my dad nurtured mine. Then last year at work, at the school where I'm working, the whole staff and all the students as well were encouraged to complete a character strength survey. And this involved, you've probably done them yourselves, it was about 120 statements and you had to agree, strongly disagree. And the idea was to identify your top five character strengths and then with an awareness of those, really try and apply them to what we were doing. And my number one strength came out as humour. And I thought this was really interesting because I had never really thought about a sense of humour, which had caused such annoyance for my teachers and also at times family and friends, to be a character strength before. So after that survey, I really started to notice the big part that humour was playing in my everyday life. Many of my most enriching interactions with people or my most satisfying experiences were punctuated with laughter. And that's when I had the idea to try stand-up comedy. This was November last year, and registrations were just opening for the Melbourne Comedy Festival's Raw Comedy Competition. And it's an open mic competition that has venues in every state of Australia. And I thought, it's for amateurs, this is perfect, I'm going to give this a go. So I signed on when the registrations opened online, instantly regretted it. I thought, why would I interrupt this perfectly comfortable life that I'm leading to get up on a stage and potentially humiliate myself in front of a room full of strangers? So I thought, well, let's not make it a room full of strangers. So I invited a bunch of friends to come. Instantly regretted it. Why would I interrupt perfectly comfortable friendships to stand up on a stage, potentially humiliate myself in front of friends? And some of them admitted to me afterwards, we were ready, if you bombed, to go, ha, 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 anyway. But I think I had underestimated those friends because they were fantastic. They sent me lots of messages of support and encouragement before the night. They turned up on the night, and their presence just made a huge difference to me. And then they celebrated with me when it went really well. And it was so much fun. Making people laugh was a really huge thrill. After that heat, I progressed to the semi-final and state final of the competition, and that wonderful support that I enjoyed at the heat continued, and I was really touched at the number of friends who came along to all three of those shows at which I did pretty much the same material, and they managed the ha 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 on the third occasion. So I learned a lot about sacrificial love from that experience. So that brings me to this topic, praise of silliness. What's the value of humour, laughter, comedy? What can these things add to our lives? Well, first of all, as we've just seen, laughter brings us together. And when I think of the people most dear to me, I think of the fun and laughter that we've shared. And Khalil Gibran expresses it beautifully when he says, "In the sweetness of friendship, let there be laughter. For," and this is beautiful, "in the dew of little things, the heart finds its morning and is refreshed." And one of my favourite things about the home group that I'm part of is the fact that our meetings are such good fun. We laugh a lot. And that's really important to me, not just because it's pleasurable, but because there's a kind of vulnerability in telling a joke, because you're putting a little bit of yourself out there, hoping that others will get it. When I tell a joke, I'm hoping that they will get me. So I think sharing jokes is a really powerful way to connect with others. Second, I just feel life is better for a little silliness. For me, humour plays a similar role in my life to the role of play in a child's life. I think we have all too few opportunities to play as adults, and so for me, playing with words and ideas, that's my leisure and my rest, and I really treasure it. Third, silliness is important because it helps me to cope when I face trouble and darkness. Sometimes it helps by distracting me, and I think there is a place for that. Sometimes people say, well, you shouldn't joke around when things are serious and heavy, but I think that's ridiculous. We all need a break sometimes when things are really weighing us down. So I think distraction is cool. It's fine. However, I also think that humour can help us to cope when things are bad because it's a way to engage with those very things that are troubling us. I think it can be really hard to make a good joke about something that you haven't given careful thought and consideration to. So I don't think every joke is a sign that the teller has missed the gravity of the situation. And chatting to Ken about this earlier in the week, he said, and I misquote, "It's not about pretending the darkness isn't there, it's about choosing to seek a glimmer of light." And that speaks really powerfully to me. So I want to show you a little video now, and Ken, I'm going to ask you to help me with this, that I think is a really great example of humour that acknowledges darkness. If you love this program as much as I do, I apologise because you've probably seen it a million times, but now I'm taking that apology straight back because if you love it as much as I do, then you'll never get tired of seeing it. It's from the final episode of the Blackadder TV series, which was set during the First World War. It doesn't get a whole lot darker than that. And in it, the captain and his men have tried everything to get out of the big push going over the top into no man's land, including pretending to be insane. All those attempts have failed and the time to advance has arrived.
Not all that good, Blackadder. Rather hoped I'd get through the whole show.
Hang on.
Go back to work at Pratt & Sons.
We're now ready to go.
How are you feeling, darling?
Not all that good, Blackadder. Rather hoped I'd get through the whole show. Go back to work at Pratt & Sons. Keep wicket for the Croydon gentleman. Married Doris. Made a note in my diary on the way here. Simply says, bugger.
Well, quite.
Let's move.
Fixed. Bayonets.
Don't forget your stick, Lieutenant.
Right there, sir. Wouldn't want to face a machine gun without this.
Listen. Our guns have stopped.
You don't think...
Maybe the war's over. Maybe it's peace.
Oh, hurrah! The big knobs have got round the table and yanked the iron out of the fire.
Thank God. We lived through it. The Great War, 1914 to 1917.
Hip, hip, hooray!
I'm afraid not. The guns have stopped because we're about to attack. Not even our generals are mad enough to shell their own men. They think it's far more sporting to let the Germans do it.
So we are, in fact, going over. This is, as they say, it.
I'm afraid so. Unless I can think of something very quickly.
Company, one, pace forward.
Oh, there's a nasty splinter on that ladder, sir. A bloke could hurt himself on that.
Stand ready.
I have a plan, sir.
Really, Bulrick? A cunning and subtle one?
Yes, sir.
As cunning as a fox who's just been appointed Professor of Cunning at Oxford University?
Yes, sir.
On the signal, company will advance.
Well, I'm afraid it'll have to wait. Whatever it was, I'm sure it was better than my plan to get out of this by pretending to be mad. I mean, who would have noticed another madman around here? Good luck, everyone.
Thank you.
I read that the BBC actually received quite a few complaints about this series because they felt that a funny program about such a horrible situation was irreverent in some way. But I find that really surprising because I feel like this is about the absurdity of war. It's not making fun of any of the participants or trying to reduce the gravity of what they experienced at all. So I found that really surprising. Coming back to the role of humour in rich relationships and thinking about when we're struggling in our lives, I think there are times when it can be really hard for us to see that little bit of light in the darkness, and it's at times like that that I'm really grateful for the humour of others. When each of my children was born, I did experience a mild depression after each of their births, and I really did not see much to laugh at when I was in that place. But I was really grateful that I had friends who did, and they gently helped me to rediscover my smile, and I'm really thankful for them doing that for me. And sort of on a related note, I think laughter is so important for us, or for me in particular, as a barometer of my mental health. I know if I'm struggling to see the humour in things, if I'm not finding anything to laugh at, that I need some help. And that was one of the key things for me, particularly when my daughter was born. I thought, I haven't had a good laugh in ages. Something is wrong. And that's what gave me the impetus to go and see a counsellor and get some help. And things really got a lot better for me after that. Fourth, I love silliness because I think it can really make us better people. A good joker has empathy because they have to work out, will this person find this joke funny at this time? That's empathy. A person with a sense of humour is grateful. We see a funny thing happen and we experience gratitude. Maybe we're thinking, thank goodness that's not me. Or maybe just, thank goodness it's not just me. I think a lot of humour comes from that. As I said earlier, a good joker is brave because they've got the courage to put a part of themselves out there to be accepted, rejected or ignored. A good joker is also humble, or so I'm told. Before my first set, friends said to me, you know, the best comedians are the ones who laugh at themselves. And that posed a real issue for me because I'm obviously too pretty and smart to be convincingly self-deprecating. So. But seriously, laughing at ourselves can be powerful medicine. To err is human, but to laugh at one's errors and learn from them, I think, is divine and so much more productive than merciless self-recrimination and beating ourselves up. If we can have a laugh and learn, that's so much better. When we laugh at ourselves, we show others that they are okay too. I don't know if you're familiar with Melbourne comedian Celia Pecola. She's on the TV series Utopia, and she's done a lot of stand-up as well. And I went to see her at the Perth Festival Fringe, and she said, how weird is it that Miranda Kerr, the supermodel, has put out a book for teenagers encouraging them to value themselves more and have greater self-esteem. She said, how is Miranda Kerr qualified to do that? I should be doing that because unlike inaccessible Miranda Kerr, I'm a borderline alcoholic who eats cheese before cutting it from the block. So when we point out our flaws and laugh at them, it can help others too. Fifth, I think comedy can make us uncomfortable in ways that are ultimately good. If someone's going to point out to me that my priorities are out of whack or that I am benefiting from a society that's built on a long history of shabby treatment of its first people or that I talk too much and listen too little, that's going to make me pretty uncomfortable, but those are truths that I need to hear from time to time. So I'm grateful for people who've managed to tell me some of those things with a bit of humour to take the edge off. These people often, they just post a meme or a satirical article online, and you know, sometimes that sort of stuff can get annoying, but it can play a really great part in helping us to see ourselves clearly without becoming overwhelmed or defensive about our flaws, and I think that's a real gift as well. Excuse me. When I was talking to Ken, I said a really interesting thing that happened was there was an Aboriginal comedian who was in the Royal Comedy Competition as well, and he progressed to the national final, which will be on TV in June if you're interested in watching him. And he made some jokes that made his audience quite uncomfortable. He referred to the people who owned his grandparents at one stage. And it was fascinating to me to see the different responses that he got from audiences and from reviewers. Some reviewers were very critical of him and said that he needed to do a bit more to make his audience feel comfortable, which I think is a shame. I think a good joke that unsettles us, it's okay to sit in that discomfort for a while rather than feel like we need to be rescued from it. Okay. We arrived at number six. Phew. A brief aside, years ago I was in church and the pastor spoke for a lot longer than he usually would. It was more than double the normal time for the sermon. And the congregation were mostly very polite, but as it went on and on, the fidgeting started to gradually increase and the subtlety of watch checking was decreasing. And the words, "and I finish with this," had never been so welcome. It took forever for them to come. And when he finally finished and stepped away from the lecture, a little voice near the front said, "Oh, finally!" And, you know, the elephant in the room was at that point. And I'm sad to say that instead of hearty congratulations, that kid got shushing and head shaking, but he spoke for all of us on that day. But I think what a shame that children in particular learn, well, I did, very early, church is not a place to laugh. We don't laugh in church. Shh, this is serious business. And I think that laughter can play a really vital role in our worship and our life with God. I admit I haven't finished the whole thing, but I read a bit of this book, Life with God, by Richard Foster, and he said in this book that it's really great for us to read the Bible with a focus on God's desire for us to have abundant life. So according to Foster, God says, and I thought this came through beautifully in Paul's song that we sang earlier, God says to us, "I am with you. Will you be with me? Will you walk with me step by step? Will you live the with God life?" And what a beautiful idea that is. And he describes that life as being scented with the fragrance of heaven and characterized by the fruit of the Spirit, which include joy. And I think just as our relationships with each other can be deepened through humour, the same is true of our relationship with God. And sometimes I think the act of rolling our eyes can be a non-verbal way of saying, "Did you see that, God?" And so many of the moments in which I've had a little laugh to myself, I can really easily picture Jesus catching my eye and having a laugh too. Particularly when it's just me and the kids and they do something that makes me laugh, I like to think that Jesus is there having a bit of a cat too. The other day, my 10-year-old, this is really weird, I was putting the key in the back door and he said, apropos of nothing, "Mum, if you lick that key, it tastes like a car key." And I honestly looked up and I saw the good Lord going, "I don't know." So, yeah. He kisses his mother with that mouth. Once when I was 10, I had a crying fit over something. I can't even remember what it was now, but I was extremely distressed. I flung myself onto my bed, beat my fist, roared into my pillow, and then when I sat up, somehow I'd managed to bite a hole in my pillowcase. And that was it. Whatever it was that upset me had kind of gone, and I cracked up. And I like to think that God was looking on, shaking his head and muttering, "You idiot," in an affectionate way, of course. So I'm convinced that God has a fantastic sense of humour, the best. And I think Jesus used and appreciated humour too. I'm going to misquote Ken again. The man was immersed in a long-standing tradition of Jewish wit, so it seems incredible that he would be able to draw and hold huge crowds without tapping into that tradition in some way. I wish I knew so much more about Jesus' sense of humour. I did try to find something about it. I asked my omniscient friend Mr. Google about it, and I came across a blog post written by an American Episcopalian priest by the name of Tim Schenck. And I hope you'll forgive me for simply reading out quite a large chunk of the post, but I think Reverend Schenck's done a really good job, and whilst I'm quite comfortable misquoting Ken, I don't want to upset an American I've never met. So here's what he had to say. He said, Jesus uses humour to teach, heal, convert, and ultimately redeem. And he does this while modelling the fact that laughter and profundity are not mutually exclusive. The humour of Jesus is subtle, nearly imperceptible at first glance. The Sermon on the Mount, for instance, doesn't begin with a joke to warm up the crowd. But throughout his ministry, Jesus displays wit, command of the language, a gift for irony and wordplay, and impeccable timing, all hallmarks of great comedians. The Gospels aren't funny in the traditional sense. It's not slapstick comedy. There are no pratfalls. They're passion narratives, not anthologies of the wit and wisdom of Jesus Christ. But then the story of our salvation, the death and resurrection of our Lord, is serious business, which is precisely why Jesus made his message so accessible. Parables, with their use of common language and commentary on everyday situations, spoke directly to people. And so while Jesus' messages held the keys to salvation, they were couched in language people could understand and relate to. A master storyteller would never forsake humour as a means to reach an audience. Jesus, who spent much of his ministry breaking down barriers between people, knew that humour does exactly this. Humour disarms and unites. It sets people at ease and leaves them receptive to the speaker's message. The encounters with the Pharisees are full of brilliant one-liners. Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are God's is a perfect response, dripping with irony. The blind leading the blind is, of course, a comical visual image and a pointed commentary on the religious leaders of the day. And think about the hilarious image of straining out a gnat while eating a camel. His hearers certainly chuckled at his purposefully ludicrous image, and it invariably stuck with them. There are hosts of other wonderfully amusing moments in the gospel accounts. There is irony and humorous exaggeration, phrases that would have brought smiles to the lips of his hearers, if not full belly laughs. Explaining the efficacy of prayer, he asks the apostles, "What father among you, if his son asks for a fish, will give him a snake? If your son asks for an egg, will you give him a scorpion?" And then later, "It's easier for a camel to go through the eye of the needle than for a rich person to enter the kingdom of God." That's a memorable image. What fool would place a lamp under a bushel basket or under a bed and not on the lampstand? So it's a bit odd that within the church sometimes the humour of Jesus is roundly ignored. One obstacle may be that Jesus' mastery of words is literally lost in translation. Our scripture is a translation of the Greek, which is a translation of Jesus' own Aramaic. Without knowledge of Jesus' native tongue, certain wordplays are simply lost to us. For instance, an added layer of Matthew 23, verse 24, is that the Aramaic word, this is the gnat and the camel image, the Aramaic word for gnat is galma, and the word for camel is gamla. So we are deaf to this aspect of the exchange. We also lose facial expressions and tone of voice so crucial to successful comedy. Letterman can make us laugh with a simple facial expression or inflection of his voice. A manuscript of his show wouldn't be nearly as amusing as seeing it live. And unfortunately, the Gospels have been handed down to us as manuscripts, not YouTube videos. The point here is not to place Jesus in the Comedy Hall of Fame. Rather, it's to encourage us to see and hear the message of our Lord with fresh eyes and ears, to discover a new aspect of his divine brilliance, and to meet him with renewed joy and laughter in our hearts. May we continue to take our ministry seriously, but not ourselves. So, Jesus knew the power of laughter, and if we exercise our sense of humour as Jesus did, valuing love, grace, and truth over a cheap laugh, then laughter can bring us closer to each other and to God. It can make our lives sweeter. It can sustain us in hard times. It can challenge our thinking and build our empathy, gratitude, humility, and courage. Wow! Silliness, I love you, and I'm looking forward to many more years in your company. Thank you. Does anybody want to share anything or ask any questions now? Paul. Do you want to?
There was a... Oh, shit. there was a wedding that I went to, that a number of us went to down at Margaret River. I rest my case. And it went on, and this is your story, Ramai, it went on and on and on, and it was very intense, and it was Pentecostal, and nobody. And then in a moment of silence, when he was taking breath, the brother of the bride from up on the hill said, "Get a wriggle on." And the whole place cracked up, and I can't remember whether he took himself seriously or not, but that has stayed with my heart for 20 years. That's all.
Jen has said I can share the other story from that wedding where the, might have been the same person, said something like, "I'd like to dedicate this to the king." And Jen, this one, said, "What, Elvis?"
I would like to ask you, Lucy, about... I've previously been reprimanded for using humour in serious situations to distract from the seriousness of it. And I've been told that this is a characteristic of most Australian men. How would you respond to that? In terms of the using the humour, I know that it's a problem in some situations, so without taking away from the value of it, how do we use it appropriately? How do we address that? How do we bite our tongue? How do we stay on topic or whatever without it becoming too serious, maybe?
I feel so poorly qualified to answer that because that is definitely... confession time, something that I need to work on too, because and I read I didn't bring it, bummer, when I was preparing I read a quote from Lewis Carroll who said something about separating the laughter of amusement from the laughter of something else. It was something like that, just how we should be careful not to be always looking for an opportunity to joke, but I think If your sense of humour is who you are, then it's not wrong to express it and use it, but perhaps read the room as much as you can, in that even if you make a joke and you get that response, "This is serious, you shouldn't be laughing about it," I think then to have the humility to apologise for hurting their feelings or to acknowledge that feeling and to enter into it with them and say, "I'm sorry, I didn't mean to reduce the gravity of this situation. I do get it." I think that could go a long way to healing that breach, yeah.
I think as well there's a difference between humour, like Blackadder, that says, "Look at this, look at it really," and humour that says, "Look over there, a flying monkey. I'm uncomfortable with that, so I'm going to look over there." But just to let you know, we do have some slapstick in our midst with our children. I walked into the back room today. You all right with me sharing this? And I found Hannah with a pair of scissors in her hand and Eden with the church checkbook in his hand. At which point I intervened.
A sign from God. Do we really need checkbooks anymore? Are we moving away from that anyway? I was at a funeral the other day. A friend of my dad's passed away, 88. Lived a good life, and I found it important hearing some of the stories about his life, how they were quite comical and humorous, and you know, normally wouldn't expect a whole, you know, funeral service where everybody's cacking themselves laughing. You know, it's normally a somber moment, but there was a sort of sense of humor and people were laughing, but really sort of deeply sad about the fact that this man who brought humour to everybody's life is now gone as well at the same time, you know. So that was quite, it's quite, you know, varying levels of emotion. It was quite a different way in which, you know, people, I guess, you know, funerals are those times when, you know, you don't know what's going to grab you and how it's going to get you, you know, and that was quite a special moment for me and everybody else in the funeral home there.
Yeah, I think that's so much like what both Elise and Ken have said about letting the humour and the darkness sit together and not try and necessarily chase away that darkness prematurely, to let people be in it and... oh, gosh, I keep having ideas and then they leave my head. Yeah, I really feel like that those two things can sit side by side. And, oh, that's what I was going to say, just about responding to when people are hurt, if you're making a joke, I think if we are making a joke because we want them to hurry up and feel better, then we're doing them a disservice. But if we're making a joke just to give them a moment to breathe, I think that's a totally different thing. So, yeah.
Early last week, a couple of days after my dad died, we were all sitting together as a family at various times, and I was actually quite giggly and lots of little jokes coming into my head, and I was quelling some of them because I knew there was other people who were struggling, my brother and his wife, and but I let some of them out, and I'm glad I did, because sort of as the week got on and we got on with the business of funerals and writing the eulogies and whatnot, it was all quite serious, and in the end I left out, I didn't attempt any humour in my eulogy, which I think was worked out quite appropriate. I was glad I was able to sort of get out some of the stuff earlier in the week. It was, I don't know, some sort of processing.
I'd like to share a story about when laughing at oneself breaks things open. I'm not actually laughing at myself, I've done that too. Before I came to this church, I led a singing group at the church where I'd grown up. And the people who came to sing were the oddest group of people, none of whom were really very musical or very singy, but they were in for a good time. And I wasn't either, and so we did our best to kind of string it together. And we'd been singing together for about 6 months, and one evening, on practice evening, a man walked in the door to join, who everyone in the congregation was scared of. He actually was a German banker, and he was gruff and tricky, and he had a long history of being difficult to have in the congregation. But he was a good musician, which was actually even scarier for this little group of people who really didn't sing very well. I had three men who were convinced they were tenors because it scared them to be a bass, even though they were like big burly Russians and they sang bass. So I just told them they were singing tenor and wrote them bass parts. that wasn't... anyway, we struggled on with him and it was really difficult. We had times when we were singing together and he would beat time against the church pew to keep... And he'd tell people off in the middle of a song for singing wrong. And anyway, at one point we were singing a song and I'd allowed him to be a soloist for a verse, because just so he could do the perfect thing and do it. And he, with full voice, he had a beautiful voice, sang this thing and mangled the words so that it came out completely wrong and meant something really ridiculous. And the whole place just held our breath. There's about nine of us. And we just all, everyone had a laugh inside, and we were so scared of this man. And he looked at us, he stopped singing, and he suddenly realised what he'd said. And there was a moment where no one said anything. And then he laughed. And I'm going to cry thinking about it, because we had never heard him laugh before. And we'd never, ever conceived that he might be able to laugh at himself. And it broke open the relationships in that group. And we sang together for about 4 years. And it just transformed that man and his relationship with the congregation.
Do we need to finish up, Ken? Or have we got time for a little?
I guess we should. Andrew's got something.
Yep.
Yeah. I think it's really great when there's when you're in the presence of a kid that hasn't learned that it's wrong to laugh when somebody farts in the middle of grace or something like that. That's fantastic.
That was my story. It's interesting hearing reference to funerals and humour. I had to do a memorial for someone, and I referred to, in the service for some reason, referred to Jesus Christ being the most underrated crossover Jewish comedian. And I don't know what, I think the person that the funeral was for was a bit of a joker, but I used the story of the log in one's eye, and I just thought that was the best Jesus joke that I remember. But also, Tyson, I identify with yourself, and coming from being a male in a family that uses humour to, you know, inappropriately and diffusing anxiety, so that's a good point as well. And thanks for this morning.
So, let's wind it up.
Yeah, I just want to thank you so much for sharing and for having me here today. I've never done anything like this before, and I just feel really privileged, so thank you so much.